Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The stakes are too high and the consequences are too real. So, New Jersey, whether you like it or not, you're stuck with me.
Yes, now that Chris Christie is definitely out of the presidential race, he can turn his attention to the state election that may be a referendum on his policies as governor. The entire New Jersey legislature, all 40 state Senate seats, all 80 assembly seats are up in November. It's November 8th. WNYC senior reporter Bob Henley is here to preview that election and explain why Christie's rise hasn't necessarily translated into support for Republicans at the state level. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
Do you think Christie's being in the national spotlight has been good for Republicans in New Jersey? How did all that presidential speculation affect state politics?
I think it created a lot of anxiety. Today in the Star-Ledger, former Governor Dick Cody, a Democrat, of course, was pointing out that he thought that had Christie actually taken the dive and gone, put his ambition above his state position as a governor, it would have given the Democrats actually an opportunity to peel off some individual Republicans in the legislature to override vetoes. So now that Christie has made a decision to stay home, so to speak, it means there will be more party discipline, surely.
So what might be at stake? Well, the entire legislature is up for election, but Democrats have a double-digit majority in the Assembly, but just a five-seat advantage in the Senate. You asked Christie about whether he thought the legislative election would be a referendum on his policies, and here's some of what he said.
Well, I don't know. I don't see it as a referendum, Bob. I really don't, because these things are district-by-district races, and given the condition of the map and all the rest of that, I don't see it as a referendum on me. I see it as a referendum on the candidates that are on the ballot. We have some good candidates on the ballot from our side that I'm trying to help as much I can. And to the extent that they get elected, they will help me to move our agenda forward more rapidly than it's moving now. But on the other hand, I've found a way to get some things done, even though we don't have the legislature. So, you know, we have some tools.
So he's walking away from this election being seen as a referendum on him. Does that mean he thinks the Republicans are not going to do that well?
Listen, we know politics, like budgeting, is about managing expectations. So what he's doing is dialing back the expectations. One of the things we have to keep in mind, he referred there to the map, and it's important for people to keep in mind that this will be the first election since the redistricting that's required by the U.S. Constitution every 10 years once the census comes out. States have to go and look to see the degree to which their legislative races, districts, and their congressional districts match what's happened. And in New Jersey's case, a couple of big developments happened. One, we didn't gain enough population like the rest of the country, so we're going to lose a congressional district. And then also we found that the population kind of moved from the northern part of the state in terms of intensity and density down to the southern area, and we saw a real increase in Latino presence. So they had to create a map that reflected those two things. As a result, voters, about 30% of voters, Brian, will be walking in to a polling place where there'll be new names on the ballot. But unfortunately, we expect the turnout to be pretty tepid, like maybe 30%.
So let's do a couple of interesting elections.
Sure.
Now we'll do a few more as Election Day comes closer. You told us about the 38th Senate District. This is portions of Passaic and Bergen counties.
Right. Now, that's where you have Democratic incumbent Senator Robert Gordon, former mayor of Fairlawn, facing Republican Bergen County Freeholder Chairman John Driscoll. That's critical because Bergen County is a real bellwether in terms of being able to win a statewide contest. And recently, because of a lot of corruption issues, Bergen County Democratic Chairman Joseph Fierro and several other officials within the Democratic Party organization had all kinds of criminal prosecution challenges to deal with. As a result, you saw a new county executive, Republican, come in there. And so we see now they are making some inroads. So if the Republicans have a credible statewide claim, and to help actually Chris Christie with his reelection should he decide to run again, it would be good to see them at least make it close there. Also, another fascinating race, which really demonstrates what redistricting means, is the case of the 27th District, where former governor and former Senate President Richard Cody, Democrat, was kind of thrown to the wolves a little bit, where he was, you know, of course, an Essex County stalwart. He was given, little mischief making here, 6 Republican Morris County towns.
Huh.
So now former Governor Cody may be walking door to door in those towns to try to get some support.
Keep his own seat.
Exactly. He faces William Eames from Whippany. So there you see a little mischief making.
I want to play a clip that we just got because President Obama is holding a news conference this morning. Oh, we don't have it yet? All right. Christie talked about the map.
Right.
This is the redistricting map after the census. As you mentioned, 30% of New Jersey voters will be casting a ballot in a different district. Do you think the new lines favor either Democrats or Republicans?
I think that it really, I hate to echo the governor, you know, each district's like a snowflake. I'll give you an example. In the 12th district, that's Jennifer Beck's district. She's a Republican elected in 2007 in that intense race with where she defeated incumbent Democrat Ellen Carter, who has been frequently on your show. In that case, Beck beat Carter, even though Carter spends multiple times more money. Now, this time, Beck faces this very dynamic Democrat, Ray Santiago, a freehold, Puerto Rican birth, self-made success story, grew up in Brooklyn. He's a lawyer, and their school funding's a key issue. That's a circumstance where he may be able to animate Latino voters in that district in a way that hasn't happened before. So Democrats may actually pick up one there.
Last thing. Occupy Wall Street is coming to Wall Street West, which means to Jersey City, and specifically to the Goldman Sachs offices there. We want to play a clip of President Obama from his news conference just moments ago where he was asked, and as far as I know, these are his first actual public comments about Occupy Wall Street.
I think people are frustrated, and you know the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration about how our financial system works. Now keep in mind, I have said before, and I will continue to repeat, we have to have a strong, effective financial sector in order for us to grow. And I used up a lot of political capital, and I've got the dings and bruises to prove it, in order to make sure that we prevented a financial meltdown and that banks stayed afloat. And that was the right thing to do, because had we seen a financial collapse, then the damage to the American economy would have been even worse.
What do you think of that, Bob?
I think he's really out of touch. I think that if you look at the book that Mr. Susskind wrote, Confidence Men, which describes, even if half of it's true, with Treasury Secretary Geithner and then Summers really kind of positioning the president to be all about continuity for capital markets and the equity markets with no attention to Main Street. What we are seeing here, and this is one of the reasons why I think Christie didn't run, throughout much of New Jersey, there are vacant homes right now, Brian, where people can't afford to live and they can't afford to stay. We're seeing across this country, it's approaching more than 1 in 5. Some surveys say as many as 30% of American households. Now, this grasp this because it's stunning. Are living in a home where the mortgage is at least 20% higher than the value of their home. These guys are going to go out and raise a lot of money. The president says, Jeffrey Sachs, Professor Sachs has pointed out, he's dining with people that can afford $35,000 a plate while people's homes are, you know, it's coming apart. Main Street has totally unraveled, and that's why the president's really disconnected from reality.
All right, WNYC's Bob Henley, watching Trenton, watching Washington. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Isabel Wilkerson on her fabulous history book and oral history book on the Great Migration to New York City nearly a century after it began. History is changing again as many African Americans are now departing the New York City area, sometimes for the South, ironically. So we will take your family's black migration stories. In fact, you can start calling and getting in line right now. Anybody who wants to tell your family's black migration story, meaning if your family came from anywhere in the South at some point in the last 100 years to the New York City area. What were the circumstances? How has that story been passed down to you? And what's your relationship to it now? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Isabel Wilkerson will join us for this in a minute.